My primary sangha is Chase Cottage. It's where my home is, my garden, my art studio. There I'm trying to figure out who my main teacher is, whether it be my husband of 33 years or my wired hair Jack Russell Terrier. My terrier tells me, shows me, and she has a gift, a wonderful gift from Abijah that used to live here. Tesha is always reminding me to be in the moment. Nothing like an animal to remind you to be in the moment all the time. And I've been meaning to ask, when she goes through Jukai, can she come in and sit here with us? If I teach her not to bark at the blue jays?
Sure.
Okay. And Mark, living with anybody for a long time has a lot of influence. You gather a lot of history. And think about it, 33 years ago, I was a really young woman. So recently, the biggest learnings or teaching that I have from him is seeing things as they are. My second or sangha, or the next sangha, that is the floating zendo. And that's who Wendy is. That's why you don't, Wendy holds down, she's the foundation. She keeps us honest, actually, at the floating zendo. And Ron has been, you've been sitting, I should have had everybody say what their history was, but recently met, and you used to sit in Haiku Zendo. Yeah. So do you remember? Do you guys, oh, you do? No?
No memory.
No memory. See, that's how long ago it's been.
What is your name again?
Don.
Sorry, I always think Ron. Don.
Do you remember us?
I can't say I do for sure. I remember photographs of Angie and obviously Kobu and Les and some of the others. But, 35 years ago.
We have a clean slate then.
And being with the floating zendo, I feel really, really, really blessed to have Angie Boisevain as my teacher. I have so much access to her, sitting with her every week, doing shashins with her, and she's very accessible. And that means also the way that she can bring the Dharma to us. It really, really irritates her that, I think it's in Wikipedia that it's has a phrase of something like she's the an enlightened housewife, ordained housewife, and she just, you could just see her little fist get like this, you know, every time that phrase comes up. But personally, I love it. I just think it's so grounded. How about that? You know, have a housewife. It also reminds me of a good girlfriend I had, and she was waiting tables at a local bar to make money to go to Berkeley, you know, to pay your way through Berkeley. And she won the Rhodes Scholarship. I guess that's to Oxford, right? And the headlines in the local paper said, you know, cocktail waitress wins Rhodes Scholarship. You know, it's kind of like the enlightened housewife. I like that contrast. So Jikoji is my tertiary or complementary sangha with Michael Shull is my teacher, and all of you, and everyone, as it's my understanding in the bylaws that all sentient beings belong to the Jikoji Sangha. I struggle a little bit with talk about, or share rather. Angie always advises that we share what's, what we're studying, what's happening with us at the time. And it seems like I've been kind of in the same chapter, the same mode for a while. So I'm going to share again. I think the last time I was up here, it was we had a really fun conversation about art and art making and how it supports my practice. And I've been doing a lot of that since this last year. I feel like I took a bit of a sabbatical from doing, a lot of doing with different organizations. I already mentioned to you that I have belonging to these sanghas, and I belong to many more, obviously, as we all do. We have many roles, and I'm really, I'm addictive. I'm very greedy. There's a lot of things that I like to do, a lot of things. And so in this last year or so, I've been paying more attention and consciously working around self-care and boundaries. Boundaries is such a weird word, though. I really have a problem. It's one of those words like tough love. For me, it just is it doesn't really communicate what's going on. But last weekend I was, way back last weekend, I was at a writing retreat. And the topic of spaciousness came up. And one of the writing assignments was to describe how spaciousness looks like, or how you embody it, or how you think about spaciousness. And for me, that's boundaries. For me, it was totally reframed for me. It's not so much what I've been working with is, boundaries always feel like a little corral or a box or something, as opposed to spaciousness. It's defining my spaciousness, or defining the space that I want to live fully in. That makes sense? Let's see how they're kind of, for me it really helped. And in thinking about the spaciousness, it also came up for me that what actually came first to my mind was Zazen. The spaciousness that arises or can arise in the practice of Zazen, and the spaciousness of it, and the practice of seeing things as they are. This has, for me, hit home quite a bit what I've been reflecting on in this last year, of seeing things as they are, cultivating a deeper practice of mindfulness to accept more, to see things as they are and to accept them as they are. It's a a lot of times, and the word that comes up for me is equanimity. But then equanimity is like one of those words like boundaries for me. I remember years ago, it was about 10 years ago, and I had a haiku, and we were like sitting in a circle like this, and we were all reading haiku, and what you do is you vote for haiku. You don't know who the author is, and everyone votes for your haiku, and And whoever votes has to say why they like the haiku or why they don't. So I read my haiku. It was something like the pines, dead and alive. Autumn dusk silhouettes of equanimity. Pines, both dead and alive. Autumn silhouettes of equanimity. Nobody voted for the poem, of course, except for one person. And the person that voted for this was the founder of the Haiku Society. She had come from Japan. English is her second language. And she founded the society along with her husband, and she voted for it. I'm like, whoa, but nobody else did. And so, of course, if you vote for the poem, you had to ask, why did you like it? And I remember her saying something like, the word equanimity is rarely used here. She says you rarely hear that word, equanimity. And it's a very important word that should be recognized. So since then, I've given it a little credence. Quite a bit of credence, actually. Hi.
Could you define the word?
Perfect. Thank you. So I looked it up. Because equanimity is, I mean, your first hit is that it's like equal, right?
Right?
Something's equal. And the other reason I'm thinking of equanimity right now is we have the autumn equinox coming up next weekend, actually. And this is where the sun crosses the celestial equator, and we have roughly where the day and the night are the equal links. And it happens twice a year. So I looked it up in the Oxford Dictionary yesterday, and equanimity is a, it's a mental composure, evenness of temper, especially in misfortune, or I'm going to say in anger, or any of the negative emotions. And Wikipedia, who I enjoy and support, is more aligned of how in our practice we look at it, is a state of mental or emotional stability or composure arising from deep awareness and acceptance of the present moment. Seeing things as they are. Which is very challenging. Can be very challenging. The other thing about this word equanimity, it always felt a little too passive for me. It's kind of like the words of like surrendering or letting go. What's passive or what's not? When actually, as I have been reflecting on this and relating it to what I've been working with of boundaries, what came up for me is this of a feeling of like the serenity prayer. Now, this may be a leap. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And this has been adopted by the 12-step programs. This is what looking at things of really what they are. And this might seem another leap again, but I jump into the first bodhisattva vow. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. How could we possibly do this? How egotistical What is this? How impossible. But of course, the vows are impossible, yet. I think it's Colvin's interpretation that Angie shared with us last week that said, beings are numberless, they will save themselves. Equanimity, serenity prayer. Gil Fronsdahl. And actually, you hear this word a lot more in insight meditation than you do in Zen practice. But Gil writes about equanimity as it's neither a thought nor an emotion. It is rather the steady conscious realization of reality's transience. It is the ground for wisdom and freedom, and the protector of compassion and love. While some may think of equanimity as dry neutrality or cool aloofness, mature equanimity produces a radiance and warmth of being. The Buddha described a mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. From another source, the Bhagavad Gita, equanimity does not mean sitting around inactive while things are happening or escaping from the world or suppressing one's feeling. Equanimity is operating from the state of supreme watchfulness, witness, without an iota of attachment or aversion. A mind of equanimity is an original pure mind, free from all suppression, fear, dullness, and ignorance. Seeing things as they are, which is really what we're doing as we come to the cushion and sit. Seeing things as they are, for me, help frames the spaciousness that I want to live in, as opposed to limiting what I want to live in, to really see things as they are, which includes foremost and first is, how am I showing up in the world? How am I interacting? How am I caring for myself? How am I caring for those that are very close to me? Being able to notice when I'm not very mindful. So I might be walking down the street. In fact, Pema Chodron, who's just, I just think she's, well, very accessible too. Very, she has a language that is easy for me to understand on how to live the Dharma or apply the Dharma. And she says, walk down the street. Walk down the street. It's called, what does she call it? Something like the one-stop equanimity practice. Just walk down the street and observe yourself. Do you have an aversion to the person that walks next to you or past you? Do you have fear? Do you have anxiety? Do you pity them? Can you recognize them? All of these, is this seeing what was really there? Or is this seeing what is? Or are these things that we're putting on these sentient beings as they cross our path walking down the street? So this was comes up for me as a practitioner, as a caregiver? What is it? What? To be clear on seeing things as they are. Does an individual need help? Do they need fixing? Do they need teaching? Do they need supporting? Seeing things as they are. Recognizing it if it's a situation or a relationship that I have any kind of influence over, because clearly I have no control over. This is what I mean about the serenity prayer, recognizing. And you know, it's a bodhisattva vow. Having the wisdom to recognize where we can influence or serve more than fix or help or turn out bad. It's just looking at the state of mind that we're offering up our energy. A source of anxiety for myself and many people right now, I'm going to project, is this upcoming election. I mean, hearing people that I know still talking about Obama being a Muslim and legitimate rape, I just kind of get a little anxious and excited about these things. Equanimity is kind of a good practice. What is real? And even if, you know, if it's made up, is this something that I can influence? Or is this really the case to just look after myself? Which is Huneng, when the first bodhisattva vow, I think he's one that says, there's numerous beings, and may I deliver them or liberate them all from my mind. We vow to deliver an infinite number of sentient beings of our mind. So, when I came to coming up here today, which was scheduled months ago, and I just kind of forgot about until a couple days ago, or was reminded when Michael called me, you know, I've learned not to think too much about it, because then it comes from a place of like a lecture or something, as opposed to want it to be more of sharing what's going on right now, and to have some kind of hopefully offer a source of thought free all or a new way of looking at things. So thinking of the topic, I thought of equanimity is what I've been thinking about. And then I always think, oh gosh, I should really be talking about Dogen or something important. But do many of you know, probably remember Frances Carney, Frances Ito Carney? She is a longtime student of Koban. She just came out with a collection of writings by women on Dogen. Are you familiar with that? Have you seen it at all? I'll get a copy for you and Chikoji to look at. In the first chapter in the introduction, she says, right off the bat, nobody should really be giving any talks about Dogen until you've been teaching at least 10 years. So I said, I'm off the hook on that. So I'm sharing, you know, what's been coming up for me in this way. So now I ask you, I kind of rambled around of all different things, from the Bodhisattva vow to the serenity prayer to boundary, spaciousness, our practice. But the more I thought about this topic and what to share with you is how much it just ties in with everything. It's not separate. It's kind of a phony title, it has many subtitles. Though Cliff, on the, if you are recording it, it can be equanimity if you want something simple. But how much it ties into everything that we do. I see it that way. I'm curious. What are you feeling, y'all? What are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's coming up for you? Please.
I'll say something.
Thank you, Judy.
Rocking down the street, I really got into that. I live in Redwood City in a suburban area where single family houses for the most part and some apartments. So when I take a walk, which I do every day, I never really want to see anybody. I really like it when there's no one there, you know. And then I'm aware that if I see somebody and they say good morning or, you know, smile, then I, oh, that was pretty nice. I like that, you know. But then I hope I don't see anyone else. It goes like that the rest of the walk, you know. So I am aware that this says everything about my relationship with other beings. It's this push-pull. It's always going. It is really constantly going on. Do I want to see anyone? Do I want to say anything? No. You know, and then, oh, that wasn't so bad. I liked that. Yeah. I don't know if other people have that experience or not.
That's a good way to, yeah, Cliff.
I was struck by the first sentence of Reb Anderson's new book called
The Turning.
A Buddha is one who sees things as they actually are, or as they really are. So that's the definition of a Buddha.
Yeah, I told you it's connected to everything, you know?
He goes on to say something like, as a result of seeing things as they actually are, a great compassionate love arises for all beings and for the misery that arises mm-hmm. when one ignores the things the way
they are.
They actually are. Mm-hmm. So that ties into saving all beings.
Yeah. Because don't you feel as we sit, right? We make choices. When I first started this practice a decade or so ago, I just thought it was an intellectual activity. I mean, I really thought Zen, you know, why should I sit? Just intellectual, you know, Well, geez, you know, it really starts hitting home. This is a powerful practice. It feels natural for me that you start embodying, and that's what practice is. We do a practice to become who we want to be or who we're meant to be, whether we want to be a really good singer or a sports player or whatever, and to see things as they are. If we see things as we are, and starting with ourselves and the study of the self, you know, I see that homeless person. I see that angry person on the sidewalk. I see the disheveled, crazy, you know, me there. I see the friendly person that you want to meet saying good morning to. It's very profound seeing things as they are within ourselves, noticing all these stories we might make up about people that we meet, and letting them go, accepting them, to connect more with all beings. that makes sense, or